Hello, this is Dr. Shiva. Welcome to our podcast, Get Educated or Be Enslaved.
Episode 1441, air date May 10th, 2024.
All right, good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you are, everyone. This is Dr. Shiva Iyaduray. Today, we're going to be having an interesting conversation with Mel on the swarm, but more specifically, what I think is valuable to talk about how Zionists and Nazis, the swarm is unleashing them to unite as never before. And that's what we're going to talk about today, and we'll be right back with Mel. We're going to be having an interview with Mel, who's very interested in the swarm, but specifically we're going to focus in on how Zionists and Nazis are uniting as never before. So let me bring in Mel. She's on Twitter Space. Mel, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. So I'm actually have Mel on speaker here, and I'm streaming it out on here. But we can go, Mel.
Okay,
so,
great.
Yeah.
So first thing I wanted to do, like, for my followers who don't know you, just a little bit of your and then what I find your swarm theory is so fascinating, and I really think that it does help to give a much more succinct and broad picture of what normal people are up against when we are dealing with the massive amounts of corruption that control our entire government. So,
yeah, I mean, so let's... I think the best thing is probably, Mel, to give a little bit of my background, as you said, so people really understand how I came up with that video and what led me to that. So to those of you who haven't seen it, that video, you can go to shattertheswarm.com. And there's a long version of it, and then there's a shorter version of it. Obviously, the long version is about where I go end-to-end drawing it, and then the shorter version is one which still is the entire process, but we clipped it and it still has substantially all of the key elements of it, but it makes it more accessible to people. You know, it's a great video that families can listen to, anyone can watch, you know, because some of my other videos I wouldn't recommend for young kids. But anyway, or, you know, you can have your young kids listen to it also, but fundamentally my journey has really been in the field of systems. It's a wonderful field because we all use the word system like we drink water, but very, very few people really understand what a system is from a very, not only some esoteric level, it can get very woo-woo, but just in a very fundamentally grounded way.
Mm-hmm.
And so my interest in that, Mel, in systems began, in political systems and medical systems growing up in an India, which had a caste system.
Mm-hmm.
Which was really taking religious concepts out of Hinduism and then melding it into political ideologies to basically justify where a small set of people can oppress others. And that became the caste system. No different than how you take certain concepts out of, let's say, Judaism or Christian, you know, and then you meld them into a secular atheistic model, which basically says that 0.0001% of people should subjugate the 8 billion, e.g. Zionism or Nazism. So it's very hard for people to understand this. And it's been something I've been articulating for nearly 40 years. And we'll come back to that, what occurred after October 7th, where it gives us an interesting and powerful opportunity for education. And then I was also exposed to medical systems as a young child growing up in India, where in India they have an ancient system of medicine. It's not that well understood. People use all these terms. People don't understand it. So it gets sort of relegated to some type of woo-woo medicine. And my grandmother was a practitioner of this, Mel. So when I came to the United States, I was fascinated with politics as well as medicine, believe it or not. That led me to start working as a 14-year-old kid in a small medical college where I invented the first email system. Before I came to MIT, but also was doing a lot of research in medicine. integration of medicine and computing. This is in the early 70s when computers were just coming. And while I was doing that work, I also created a system to help secretaries move from the old-fashioned typewriter to what is now, you know, the inter-office mail system, which every feature that we have in those systems, I put it into 50,000 lines of code as a 14-year-old kid, named it email, got the first US copyright. All of this occurred before I came to quote unquote MIT, which tries to think that they're the only places that can innovate and everyone else is dumb. Like you have to go to MIT now. So I've had both versions of it, right? Being outside and then being inside. But my journey never stopped because I was very, very curious about why there was this system of oppression where a small set of people thought they were better than others and could exploit that. My parents came to the United States because of that caste system. America and the framers of the US Constitution took a very different approach, right? The Bill of Rights, all the different amendments, court rulings, which were really a forward push forward, you know, a push forward of history. So in 2007, I finished my PhD. I did 4 degrees at MIT in electrical engineering, in computer science, in architecture, believe it or not, in design, mechanical engineering, another master's. And then I got my PhD in a field called systems biology. But throughout that, I was going in and out of MIT, started seven many successful companies in all different fields. And the other third thread throughout that was I was always a ground level activist. I always had this, I concluded that the only way the world has ever changed is when we had bottoms up movements. The world, yeah, the world has never substantially changed from politicians or top down, none of that. This is just hogwash. It's something that's promoted by those in power. So they corral young people into think that, you know, becoming a congressman changes something. More than likely, you become part of the swarm, and you have to, in the United States, you have to be part of the Zionist swarm to do that. So when I finished, throughout my PhD and my undergraduate work, people can go just look at it. I've led some of the biggest demonstrations, but working people. It wasn't like students just on a campus, but it was always integrating with working people because I realized students have a short lifetime. To think that a student is going to change the world is a lot of hubris. You have to integrate it into the lives of working people. And I'll talk about that. But this journey led me, after I finished my PhD, back to India on a Fulbright, where I uncovered the missing link between ancient systems of medicine and, believe it or not, engineering system science, Mel. And that missing link was the basis of system science that I created, a new type of system science, which allows us to integrate many, many different facets of life, health, medicine, biology, everything. And that core became the base of many other inventions I did. Systems Health, Cytosolve is a company which is eliminating the need for animal testing. We've discovered amazing medicines without killing animals. But that's where I'm at, but I'm a systems guy. But I participate in all these different fields, be it politics, medicine, health. I don't see a difference in any of these. The establishment typically likes to bucket you into one area. But that's been my journey. So when I did that swarm video, it was literally the integration of political theory with engineering system science. When you look at that diagram, you know, in the subtext of it, is I explain to people what an intelligent system is. An intelligent system has a goal. An intelligent system has to observe what's actually going on to understand where it's at today. Because you can't get to your goal if you don't know where you're at. That's called a sensor. And then you have to make conscious decisions. And those decisions are inputs into that system, which affect three forces: transport, conversion, and storage, movement of information, matter, and energy, the conversion, and the vessel, and out comes an output. You observe that and you say, wow, am I doing the right thing? That leads to more inputs. And you do this process. And all of this is occurring with a disturbance. So for the swarm, which is what I consider the elites, unfortunately, many, many people politically get lost because they think those in power are at a particular geographical location, like a swamp, like Trump used, right? That's much more, or they think it's one group of people. Right. or they think it's a particular race. It's not. In the modern world, it's a multiracial, decentralized aristocracy who among themselves may have their minor differences. But ultimately, they're united to make sure that the broad set of working people, the 8 billion of us, do not overcome our seeming differences, which they accentuate, race, religion, caste, etc. So we don't shatter the swarm. And the front end of this, the things that we see, the aspects of what we see of the swarm that we as a citizen participate in, are two heads of the beast. One is the obvious establishment, like the Clintons, like the Bushes, right, etc. But they also have the not so obvious version of that, who are people who speak a good game, be it Booby effing Kennedy or Obama or Bernie Sanders or unfortunately Trump, right? And these people speak a good game, but when you really unravel it, they're actually serving the swarm, and they exist to make sure we keep looking to them for our liberation. So that's what that swarm video is about. And right now you're seeing how the swarm is extremely concerned, because over the since October 7th, I mean, I've been doing this education for years, but it really took off because people started realizing, wait a minute, being anti-Zionist is not anti-Semitic. This is a very, very important thing. And Zionism is actually racism, which serves the swarm, imperialism. And in fact, Zionists are actually anti-Semites. So billions of people started opening their eyes to this in the last 6 months. So it's a revolution in terms of knowledge expansion. And in response to that, the swarm now is literally uniting Zionists and Nazis again, as occurred in the 1900s. So they're unleashing people who will speak rhetoric against Jews, right? Or supporting Hitler.
I think something that's become clear for a lot of people after October 7th, you know, when you think about like swarm being stuck inside, you know, like if a swarm of bees came up around you, right, you would be focusing basically on hitting the one or two that's like right in your face. And then, you know, but you're not actually making a difference. And I think that when people are looking at our problems and they're taking them on one by one, and not really making, you know, connecting the dots that actually this is happening because this serves the interest of this and this and this. And I'm not one of these people that really subscribes to, like, you know, like, oh, this tiny cabal of people.
Yeah.
You know, they're room pulling all the strings. No, but there is a certain sect of people that, and you said, you know, 10,000 are the powerful, and which is still a lot of people when you think about it. And but so all of these institutions have been molded to serve the purpose, the things that interests, you know, that serve their interests. And so I think after October 7th, you know, when people were like, okay, well, we want to stop the bombing, they started to see that, well, hold on, the politicians are obviously in the back of Israel, but then the media isn't reporting the things that it's supposed to be reporting. And the celebrities, all of the celebrities that never shut up about anything, they're all quiet now. All of these things, you know, are connected. And I think it's giving people a much better view of just stepping back and really observing and taking in how all of these things are connected. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is the concept of broadly, I think one thing that we need to recognize is that those in power love political ideologies which justify the fact that a small set of people should rule over all of us. So they make up these ideologies, and that's called propaganda war. So they created Zionism. They created Nazism, the concept of an Aryan race. They created Brahmanism. So you look at all these cultures, right? Mm-hmm. Far East cultures, you know, Central Europe cultures, you know, Western Europe cultures. Those in power love to innovate political ideologies which aim to justify why a small set of people to subjugate others. And that's what Zionism was. And for years, the elites in major institutions, governments, supported this ideology. They supported Hitler. Many, the same people who supported Zionism actually supported Hitler. In fact, Hitler coordinated with Zionists. This is a well been researched and written about. They worked together, in fact, to butcher Jews. And I think one of the key things I want to make here, Mel, is that the difference in class is always thrown under the rug. So these rabid true anti-Semites, they always say, oh, the Jews this, the Jews that, the Jews this. And the Zionists love that when they do that, because whenever they attack Jews, it benefits them. But the reality is, in Europe, for many years, there were two sets of Jews. Hardworking, peasant, working-class Jews, who indeed were being butchered in the pogroms. And people need to understand that. And then there were the elite billionaire Jews, the Rothschilds, who were advisors to the kings and queens. They were their bankers. These two sets of Jews were very different. But the elite Jews loved to hear about, in fact, they supported the butchering of the working class Jews because they could use that suffering to advance themselves, Zionism. So Zionism has profited from anti-Semitism. Very important to understand. Just like the elites profit from radical Islam. They love radical Islam because then they could say, see, this is what's going on. This is no wonder why Israel funded and supported Hamas for nearly 30, 40 years. Because they want to diminish the fact that there are actual secular movements, freedom fighting movements, against the theocracy of Israel. So these forces of Nazism, Zionism love fundamentalist movements because they use them to paint broad swath brushes. And that's what you see going on now. You see Elon Musk allowing scumbags on the Twitter. And by the way, Twitter is a very controlled environment, but actively promoting them because many, many billions of people were starting to understand anti-Zionism is not anti-Semitism. So when they were starting to get that, he starts putting fools like this idiot Nick Fuentes on. He's a fool, okay? Complete scumbag. Who is a Hitlerite? Who is truly anti-Semitic? And the reason that they're doing that is they need to once again conflate anti-Semitism. They need to blur these lines. So this is something that I want to awaken people to. So the Zionists and the Nazis are really coming together. And the reason I say this is I did a post 2 days ago. You know, when you really look at history, not the fake history, but you really look at it with the veil removed, it was the Russian people, the people of the Soviet Union, 25 million of them died fighting Hitler.
Right.
And this is something removed out of American history. And it was the working class of Russia who rose up. I'm not talking about any particular leader, but these people remember the butchery of the Nazis, and they fought, you know, neighborhoods with pots and pans, literally, against the Nazis. And we must give due credit to them. And so I posted that. And what you'll see is I've never seen this, the number of Nazis who came to my post. So they're supporting butchering Jews openly. They're praising Hitler, and this is exactly what the Zionists want. They want these people unleashed because people are starting to finally realize that Zionism is racism in the service of imperialism. Zionists collaborated with the Nazis. So now to blur it, they let these fools on who have a necrophilia, as my friend Nick Griffin said, a necrophilia type attachment to Hitler. It's like some cult-like worship.
I'm personally so sick and tired of World War II analogies. If I never have to hear another one, it can't be too soon. So I tried to avoid all of that because obviously we do live in different times now. But it has been interesting to see just the kind of explosion of the would have never been allowed, even just 2 years ago. I'm a free speech absolutist. You can say whatever you want. But something that I think is dangerous for a lot of people is to kind of fall into this rabbit hole of just, you know, not really understanding. Everybody knows there's something wrong, but not really understanding and looking for an easy out. And so looking for a scapegoat, whether it be Jews, whether it be, Muslims, whether it be white people. That's a very simplistic way of thinking, and it just leads you nowhere, essentially. You're not going to solve anything.
Well, I think where we're at, Mel, is there is an active effort by the swarm, an active, deliberate effort to reunite the unholy alliance in a very, very rapid way, Zionists and Nazis. That's what's going on right now. Now, some of those young people, you know, they're just dumb. You know, they're somehow moved by Hitler, all this. But there's another set of people who are highly conscious of what they're doing. This is done in a very deliberate way. And that's what we people, working people, need to become aware of. This is being done in a very, very deliberate way. And those people you're going to watch are going to be promoted on social media because they can turn on and turn off the spigot. So they're going to amplify the voices of these true anti-Semites, and they're going to attack. Then they're going to use that as a basis to attack anti-Zionists. Everyone knows on May 1st, something quite extraordinary took place in the U.S. House of Representatives. All the Zionist scumbags in there, in a vote of 310-91, passed a bill that said that it will be illegal, essentially, to basically equating anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. The resolution of that bill was passed on December 6, 2023. The foundations of that bill were signed into executive order by Trump, because Trump was completely wholly owned by Israel and the Zionist lobby. That's who put him in. So this is quite extraordinary, because what we're saying is that they are institutionalizing and equating anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. They're using the IQHRA's definition, the Israeli Holocaust Remembrance Alliance, which is one of the most Zionist definitions. And all of this is occurring very, very deliberately and slowly. And it should be very dangerous to every person observing this should be really concerned. So the social media, you know, what I discovered in 2020 is, you know, I was the one in my lawsuit in 2020, uncovered the fact social media companies have an unholy alliance with government. I exposed that. People like Tucker Carlson and all these people, Glenn Greenwald, intentionally concealed that news. And then they did a limited hangout. But that's one thing that's occurred, the complete control of social media to true anti-establishment people. The second thing that's occurring is they've said free speech does not equal free reach. This is far from what the founders of the United States wanted. Free speech and free reach were always supposed to be equated. They've taken the ADL definition, and Elon Musk has said that. Free speech does not equal free reach. That's the destruction of the First Amendment. So we are seeing a step-by-step move down this path. And so when I refer to that tweet I did talking about, you know, that, you know, supporting, or that we as people throughout the world should pay great homage to the Russian and people of the Soviet Union, you can see the reaction by these Nazis on that post. So.
Right. But don't you think there's also like the Bolshevik, you know, element that, you know, obviously Bolshevism, that is the history of Russian people that most Americans know when you talk about Russian uprising.
Well, we should talk about Bolshevism. Most people, let's talk about Bolshevism. It's very important to discuss this. You know, the academic circles starting the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, they actually got together at various universities. And so let me just step back. The entire goal of the swarm, this is like foundational, and I tell people to write this down. When you do a systems analysis on this, one of the things you find is the swarm is committed to one specific goal. If you take system science, their goal is to make sure that the mass of 8 billion people throughout the world, who are extraordinary human beings, who all work hard, majority of them, right? We never unite, overcome our demoralization to create the world that we want, truth, freedom, health. They don't want that. This is very deliberate, Mel. And so since the history of them observing people organizing, self-organizing systems by themselves, they have realized, holy shit, we cannot have these people self-organize. So you go look at you don't even have to go to communism or Russia or Marxism, Leninism. You can just look at the workers' movements in the 1800s in the United States. Are you aware, Mel, that May Day, you know what May Day commemorates, May 1st?
No, that's sorry. I know I should.
So May Day, by the way, to people listening, I'm doing a Twitter space, but May Day commemorates the fact that four American workers in 1886, American workers, were hanged in America for fighting for the 8-hour workday. Okay? When those workers were hanged in, you know, workers throughout the world, because the late 1800s and early 1900s were a time of great upheaval all over the world. It was a time when, you know, if you work, you work 20-hour days. It was not uncommon. Children starting from the age of 3 or 4 or 5 were working. And a lot of people have forgotten this has been erased out of American history. So working people were treated like true slaves, even in the United States, Europe, et cetera. So in reaction to that, people, by the way, women led many of these movements right here in Massachusetts, in Lowell, Massachusetts, in New York. Women were the big leaders of these movements. And those movements by the 1900s had grown explosively to demand basic rights, elimination of child labor, building of roads, building of water systems. And if any significant growth, the greatness of America came out of those mass movements. There were close to 250 million people who did major worker strikes and 11,000 strikes in the United States. And so if you look from 1900 to 1970, it's the reason people like my parents came here, immigrants from all over the world, because the lowest income quartile, even the second to lowest, all of people's wages grew explosively. America was very thriving, but it was directly related to these very powerful workers' movements. And this is something everyone needs to really, really rehear. And by the 1950s, the right wing and the left wing got together and they decided we must destroy this notion in the American people's brains that they can build these bottoms-up movements. So the right wing called all of these movements capital C communist, and the left wing took over many of these organic trade union movements, led by women, led by everyday people. And so by the 1970s, there were no more strikes in the United States. People stopped fighting for themselves. And between 1970 till today, there's only been about 900 strikes with 2 million people participating in them. And the wages of the average hardworking American worker has gone down by $47 trillion, which has been expropriation to the elites. So this is, and the RAND Corporation, which is obviously a very, you know, ivory tower research organization, did this report 2 years ago. A lot of calculus, a lot of math. But people need to understand there's a direct correlation. When we fight for our rights, bottoms up, we grow, everyone wins. And when we stop fighting, we all lose. So now when you look at the Bolshevik Revolution, let's really talk about the Bolshevik Revolution. No one's really, I've studied it closely. People, oh, Bolshevism, let's talk about it. Let's have a real discussion. First of all, in the 1960s, recognizing this, academic elites started literally making up shit. They said, oh my God, the Bolsheviks killed 30 million people. And someone asked a professor, who I know, how are you going to come up with that number? We're just going to say it. Because they needed to equate working people's movements with Nazism. It's quite disgusting. And so now you go to Russia. Let's discuss Russia. Russia was in Tsardom. The history of Russia was absolute Tsardom. There was pogroms that would take place. You had massive feudalism, and massive Russians lived in hell. There was about a 3 to 5% working class, industrial class in the late 1800s and early 1900s. Very small set of people. Most of Russia was peasants. All right, now throughout Europe, between 1800s and 1900s, people had expected there was going to be a major uprising of working people. When we say working people, let's define that. Working people were industrial workers, Mel, meaning not peasants who worked on farms. People were in the cities. Now, which country in Europe had the most advanced industrialized working class? It was Germany. So people had predicted that Germany was going to have this massive, massive revolution because the German working class was very sharp and smart. There were a lot of Jews in Germany. Hardworking Jews, intellectual Jews, who were mobilizing such movements at that time. Lenin and the working people of Russia independently feeling the subjugation of the Tsar, while also independent of Lenin or the Bolshevik Party, were independently organizing these movements. And you can read about it. There were uprisings of the sailors and soldiers and navy occurring long before this because they were against what the Tsar was doing. And in that environment, there were many parties, left-wing parties, right-wing parties, who were having all sorts of discourses on how to deal with the Tsar. Most of them wanted to work with the Tsar. They said, oh, he's a nice guy. Let's work with him, okay? Because they didn't want, they wanted to suppress the mass of workers there. Out of that arose the Bolshevik Party, which was a very minority party. And that party led workers to a successful revolution against the Tsar, 1917. And if you look at the events of 1917 during 1919, massive changes took place within Russia. Now think about this. Russia puts up Sputnik in literally 33 years from that moment, 1950s. How did that happen? How does a country go from feudalism to putting up something in space? Because they unleashed the large power of these working people who were absolutely suppressed. Lenin, to his credit, promised three things: land, peace, and bread, and he delivered on all three. So since that, and by the way, the day that the Bolshevik Revolution, the Russian Revolution, took place, and everyone needs to understand, this is the actual history, 19 countries tried to invade Russia. 19 countries. And these were the so-called white fascist white Russians who wanted to overthrow this emerging country where workers actually seized power, bottoms up. And the day that the Bolshevik Revolution took place, 125 organizations sprung up all over the world. They said, wow, working people are risen up in Russia, in the United States, in India, in France. It was, if you read John Reed's book, 10 Days That Shook the World, it's a book called Reds. People may want to read it. Okay, John Reed was a journalist. So we need to go back and really look at that for what it was. Now, these 19 countries who tried to overthrow Russia were so scared that this concept of working people coming to power would spread to their countries, they had to choke it to death. And they were quite successful. They brutalized the Russian people. They surrounded Russia, right? And Stalin comes into power through that moment after Lenin's death. Stalin was not a theoretician. But imagine where you are in North Carolina. Imagine, Mel, that you had led a successful revolution for the people of South Carolina. Well, guess what? All the other governors of all the other 49 states are going to unite and try to overthrow you. And you're going to go into a wartime model, no different than in 1776, when after the American Revolution took place, the British tried to overthrow it. There's only one country which burned down the White House. It was Britain.
Right.
So the counter-revolution was quite severe in Russia. And that led to a model of a wartime model, which Stalin comes into power. So it was a reaction to what took place. And so this needs to be clear. So all these idiot Nazi Zionists, oh my God, the Bolsheviks killed. There's no data on this. They're just making it up because they want to equate working people's movements to Nazism. And I know this because there were a number of professors in the late 70s and 80s who were invited to meetings where they were told they would be fired or kept in their departments unless they started to perpetuate this lie. And one professor got up and they said, can you show me the data that the Russians, you know, that these people killed 20 million people? He goes, we're just going to say it. So that's what's going on. The ultimate goal of the swarm is to make sure we, particularly in America, the working people of America, never recognize their noble history of building these bottoms-up movements. So we capitulate to these fools. And that's what's been going on. So there's been a massive rewriting of history because, and that's why right now is very, very dangerous, because Zionism and Nazism were the forces that the swarm unleashed to justify that it's okay for a czar, it's okay for a bunch of priests or Brahmins or a bunch of small set of people to rule over us. And this is at the heart of it. So they may have their differences, Mel, the swarm, minor differences. One says east, one says west. One may like, you know, chocolate. One may like tiramisu. But at the end of the day, they are united to make sure we as working people never organize and unite around real leaders. people like my, yeah. So that's where this is coming from. So Bolshevism, come on, you have to really go study it. They're just throwing shit against the wall. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But to kind of push back on that, I think that people who, you know, subscribe to Nazism or who don't view it as the great evil that it's been, they would say the same thing, that this is, all about some contentions with historical facts about the Holocaust that people have. We know that, and I know that's, nobody wants to talk about that, but it is what it is. And so I think that a lot of people would push back and say, well, because there was this just massive demonization of working class Germans, who again were part of the Nazi party. So,
Well, let's just stop right there. This is what actually happened in Germany. Of the, again, unfortunately, what's happened is, the propaganda machine in the United States just says stuff and they do it through academia. This is what fundamentally happened. In the early 1900s, there was, again, this growing workers' movement in Russia. The leaders of those movements were Jews, working class Jews and Germans. And when Hitler was rising up, these Jewish trade unionist leaders and Germans basically said, wait a minute. And there was this very small group called Zionists, a very small emerging group done by Theodor Herzl. And the Zionists were seen as a fringe party who everyone hated, actually. However, what took place was that Hitler effectively used them. The first people that Hitler butchered were trade union leaders. And those Jews, that's who we went after, supported by U.S. and British imperialism. Because the United States and Britain did not want to see a major revolution take place in Germany, because then you would spread to the United States. This is what their concern was. Again, growing back to the fact in the late 1800s and early 1900s, America was on the verge of revolution, massive revolution, which has been wiped out of American history. So the Jews of that era were like, wait a minute, we're not going to go to some place called Argentina or Uganda. This idiot, Herzl, who was, by the way, an atheist, was promoting the concept, oh, we're being oppressed here, let's go over here. His number one choice was actually Uganda and Argentina and actually parts of Texas.
Right, I thought it was Mississippi, was there not?
Even Mississippi, but Uganda and Argentina, and he had unearthed some old stuff saying those were the Holy Land. The British said, no, we're gonna place you here. But the bottom line is that the Jews knew that they were Europeans, no different than the blacks who'd been here for 400 years, knew that they were, at this point, they were in America. And you can contrast it to Mark, or you can relate it to Marcus Garvey in the 1800s, who said, oh, blacks are being mistreated here. Let's all go back to Africa. And he actually went and got some ships to ship people back. But the large majority of blacks viewed themselves as Americans, and we're going to fight here. This is our land. We're going to fight for our rights. So one was cultural nationalism. The other was progressive nationalism. So same thing in Germany. People like Herzl were telling European Jews, who were actually Europeans, to say, oh, let's go to some other land. And Jews were like, no, this is our land. We're going to fight for our rights here. And that's what had to be demolished. So the more anti-Semitism they suffered, the more the Zionist movement grew. And that's what actually took place. The Zionists collaborated with the Nazis. They crushed the workers' movement in Germany.
Who are the ones actually, you say, okay, the Nazis, but where was the money coming from? Because obviously this all has to be funded.
So it was funded by British imperialism, the wealthy Jewish bankers. So we have to draw this distinction. This is why I have great distaste for these true anti-Semites, Jews. Why are you calling everyone Jews? There were super wealthy Jews, just like saying Hindus. Or saying Christians, they're the really wealthy evangelical Christians who, by the way, profit from Zionism and the broad mass of American working class Christians who are taken advantage of. So no different. So you have the broad set of working class Jews, and then you have these elite billionaire Jews who used to be in the courts of kings. They were their bankers. those people funded both Nazism and Zionism. And then they were backed by British colonialism and U.S. imperialism. Why? Because that little strip of land, which was Palestine, that little area, they knew was important for Britain and U.S. imperialism. They knew, Mel, that it was a very strategic place for oil, right? For strategy. So if you look at the history of Britain, wherever they go, they create chaos. Africa, India, they have King A fighting King B, and then they come in and they steal all their resources. So this is what they did. So they saw this emerging wackadoodle group of Zionists, and they said, oh, these people could be very valuable. Let's place them over here. They knew it would create chaos. And that chaos became very valuable to British and U.S. imperialism. So they used the Jewish people. And the Zionist movement was valuable for that.
Now, see, something I take issue with is the actual geological strategy of Israel, because it's actually not really that convenient as far as, you know, the Gulf states go. You know, it's they don't allow us to have troops there. I don't even actually know if our bases would be, you know, that's a good place to actually have a base. So this is like, that's like a common argument that you hear from people. No, we have to have, you know, a country in the Middle East because of the oil. Yeah,
right.
That's very frustrating for me, because all you have to do is just look at the geography and see that that doesn't make any damn sense, you know?
Yeah, if you look at where it's situated, right, you have to also understand that we're thinking there's a distinction between Israel and U.S. imperialism. So when we say the United States, we have to again draw a distinction between the broad set of the American working people and the U.S. elites, the swarm, who are one and the same with Zionists. So you cannot get an office in the United States Congress without being Zionist. You're not going to get in. So the issue is, we have to start retooling ourselves with these words. When we say Israel, the United States, we have to realize that the Israeli swarm serves the interests of U.S. imperialism, whether it's Trump, whether it's Booby Kennedy, whether it's Biden, whether it's the Clintons, whether it's the Bushes, whether it's the wealthy bankers. These people are one.
Right. You know, so you're talking to your normie. You ask them, or, you know, that's almost an immediate response. We have to have, basically, we have to have our guys there because we need to make sure we can secure that oil. And for me, that's really frustrating, because I'm like, actually, have you even looked at the map? It's nowhere near, it's closer than, you know, obviously than Louisiana, but it's not in the Gulf states. We have all of the military bases we need all around in the Gulf, where the oil is at. And, you know, I'm not one of these people. It is important to secure resources. I'm definitely, you know, we need to build alliances. There's really no strength through bombing countries left and right. And we've seen just the total deterioration of that of that foreign policy in the last 10 years or so. But I think that it's going to be hard to persuade people to kind of give up. And so for me, I try to argue from a different aspect, in that actually this doesn't serve our interests the way that you've been told. You've been lied to about that. You know?
Well, I think the issue is, when we say, I think the way that we win that argument, Mel, we have to distinguish when we say us. Mm-hmm. Who are we talking about us? Are we talking about a handful of people who profit from being able to get $2 billion loans from the Saudi family, like Jared Kushner? And by the way, the Saudis are absolutely Zionists themselves, the House of Thought. Or are we talking about the broad mass of people in the United States? Are we talking about Jared Kushner when we mean us? Are we talking about Ivanka Trump when we mean us? Are we talking about, you know, Jeffrey Epstein when we mean us? Are we talking about, you know, Hunter Biden? Who are we talking about when we mean us? Because this situation with Israel profits them, not us.
Right.
Because the amount of money that's spent on these wars actually supports them. It's money laundered back to their bank accounts. So we need to start using that. I'm saying, when we say us and them, we should start saying it's us and them. And we have more an interest, the American working people have more an interest with the Palestinian working people.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so when it comes to military policy, if the United States ethos, which is the working people of this country who believe our ethos, if we really want to support that ethos, we should be actually funding and defending the Palestinian people. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, make that argument all the time. You know, conservatives, so obviously from a conservative standpoint, it's just silly to me the way that Palestinians are demonized all the time because they are inherently very conservative people. And so that's one of the more bizarre dynamics of this entire situation.
One thing that's happening, and this is why I believe the swarm brought in Trump. You know, they used Obama for two terms and he printed $8 trillion that they needed. 57% of the people voted for Trump had voted for Obama. So they used him as their puppet for about 8 years. Then they needed a white guy. And that's why they brought in Trump. And Trump executed flawlessly for them. Everything they wanted, he gave to them. And so now they're in quite an interesting conundrum because there's a large set of the American working people who've understood this dynamic of Zionism. So I think they're trying to figure out what to do, but the reality is that from a military basis, the amount of money that they print to, so the unholy alliance that's occurred is they have figured out how to print money. And the US dollar is not backed by gold, it's not backed by petroleum, but it's backed by the F-15s. And, massive amounts of weaponry. This is why Israel is key. So the same people who support Israel are the same people who enjoy printing money.
But also because the petrodollar is the U.S. serves as the petrodollar, which, is something that's very frustrating for me because obviously with our sanctions on Russia and Iran, we have incentivized huge swaths of the world's population to create alternative markets, and it's not going to be long to where they really get this down and they don't actually need the U.S. dollar trading to trade oil with. And it's not like we've adjusted for that as far as our imports go. We still have a trade deficit with China, which I think most of the world we have a trade deficit with. So that's going to, if the petrodollar is replaced or the U.S. dollar is replaced as the petrodollar, then our buying power on the world stage will just disintegrate.
Well, what I think is happening, Mel, I have a little bit of a different view on this. What I see happening is a lot of people say the U.S. dollar is going to lose value. But if you actually go look at it, the U.S. dollar continues to be a very strong currency in spite of what people say. BRICS was actually created by JP Morgan. So I have a different view on this. Again, for them, the massive elites and the swarm, I think they have congealed on the dollar for their use. Because if you look at it, for example, in India, as the Indian elites have grown with the stock market, they're actually selling their, rebuying back shares, selling it and putting their rupees into dollars. So the dollar has become the standard bearer for the elites by and large. Still, that's one piece. The other piece is, I think her name is Stephanie Keating out of University of Pennsylvania, and the modern economic theorists are saying print as much money as you want. It's called modern monetary theory, MMT. So they're printing whatever money they want. And their theory is they say, don't worry, print as much money as long as you're the reserve currency. And then if you follow that one step through, how does the U.S. maintain its reserve currency status? Through weaponry, through weapons. And this is where Israel is critical for the U.S. And this is where I think the Israeli swarm has the U.S. imperial swarm. They're in an unholy alliance. Because in order for them to print money, they need, or they believe, but not us. That's why I'm saying you're bringing up a good point. We have to distinguish between us and them. For them to keep printing money, to keep living the lavish lifestyles that they do, they need Zionism. They need that control through Zionism.
They need war.
And they need war. Yeah. Or they need the threat of war. You say? So this is where it's come to. There is an us versus them. So we have to stop saying the United States. We have to say the American people or U.S. imperialism. We have to distinguish that. U.S. imperialism profits from Zionism. The American people don't. U.S. imperialism profits from keeping Israel up and running. The American people don't. U.S. imperialism profits from having the Taliban in power in Afghanistan. They made sure that happened. And they subjugated the women in Afghanistan who were rising up with RPGs to fight the Taliban. We walked away from them. So U.S. imperialism loves dictatorships. For the last 100 years, U.S. imperialism has sent us, working people, to fight their wars of imperialism. So we have to draw this serious difference, frankly, this class difference. And this is what I'm saying. There's a lot of effort put in to propagandizing us against big C communism. Because they need to get out of people's heads. Oh, if you say workers unite, you're a communist. They have to do this red scare on us.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, all the time.
Explain.
You know, I think almost all conflict is class conflict.
It is class conflict. I'm glad. It is.
Yeah.
And that is why, you know, the Zionists and the Nazis, I believe we're in a very, and I never like ringing alarms like this, but from what I've seen in the last 24 to 48 hours, the Zionists and the Nazis are uniting as never before because they want to gloss over the class conflict. That's what their job is. They want to make it about, you know, the fundamentalists versus white people, right? And they do not want to talk about class. You nailed it. It's class conflict. And that is what we have to talk about.
Obviously, being a conservative, I'm well aware of how uncomfortable that makes people talking about class because, we've been subjected to a lifetime of anti-communism. And I don't actually subscribe to communist ideology. One of these people, I just kind of, I can see the good and the bad in all of it, but capitalist. I don't believe that we have capitalism here in the U.S. I think it's crony capitalism, clearly, what is doing.
I think this is a deeper discussion, Mel. What's happened is that all of these systems, economic systems, go through different stages of development. No different than a child goes through when it's born, then it goes through, you know, early childhood, then it goes through adolescence, then it grows up, adulthood, early adulthood, late adulthood, and then he gets sort of, you know, over time, right? And capitalism was developed at a time that really was very valuable in the 16, 17, 1800s for expansion of markets, innovation, etc. By the mid 1900s to now, it's become monopoly capitalism.
It's become, right.
Yeah.
A really good book I recommend to people all the time is The Myth of Capitalism. It came out in 2019. You can look it up. I don't know the author's name off the top of my head, but he is a capitalist. So it's a well written book. But
Marx and Engels were capitalists.
I'm sorry, who?
Karl Marx and Engels were capitalists. So if you read when Marx died, he said the worst people in the world are Marxists. You see, Marx was an economist and most of his life was spent retrospectively looking at economies. So his retrospective analysis was quite spectacularly on target. But Marx's prospective analysis, you know, he couldn't have predicted cell phones. He couldn't have predicted all sorts of things, right? But the most of Marx's analysis is the basis of Western capitalism. Marx's analysis is used in all Harvard business schools, the concept of surplus value. So we have to go back and relook at these things. But the bottom line is that there is class conflict. And
right. Well, I think, you know,
independent of Marx. Yeah.
In the book, you know, they talk about the Chicago School of capitalism rising up in the 70s and kind of really taking on this libertarian model. Zero regulation from government whatsoever, which as a conservative, is that doesn't really, conservatism is believing in a libertarian capitalist model as long as you have a strict social model, right? And we've kind of just done away with both of those things in the last 30 years or so. There's almost no regulation on business. So we have all these monopolies, duopolies everywhere. And then the aspect that should have kept them in check, you know, social constraints, the sense of shame, sense of greed, all of those things are gone. And so there's really just no check on this capitalism. And now it's turned into, I don't know what you would call it now. I guess people call it credit capitalism, but
yeah, it's called it's called imperialism. That's what it's become. It's become imperialistic because the value that capitalism now creates is not real value, right? It makes all sorts of products and things that most of us don't even need. It's not doing real value creation. And where it's headed is that it's about destroying labor, right? So the elites look at this system and they start saying, wow, why do I need 8 billion people? That's what they're really saying, you know?
Yeah, it's scary.
Yeah.
The kind of undertone that you start to feel all over the place when you look around.
Yeah.
You know?
So I think this is a very, but I really wanted, you know, when you look at the Swarm video, the essence of that video was to give people an understanding that there's a systems dynamic. At MIT, at Harvard, at Yale, at all of the major institutions, Mel, they actually study this. I used to teach it. So the elites are very aware of systems dynamics. And they are using it in a very methodical way to set their goals in a very disciplined way. Today, now they can gather infinite amounts of data, which is the sensors of a system, one of the nine principles. And they have enormous ability to make decisions to guide this very unstable system. The example I give is if you try to take a pencil and you try to put the point of it on the desk and try to stabilize, very difficult, right? So
right.
That is what the current imperial capitalist model has become. It's become highly unstable for the elites. So the only way for them to stabilize it is through infinite amounts of surveillance and rapid capabilities to control situations. And they're going to get better and better at it unless we wake up to what they're doing. That's what the purpose of the Swarm video was. And they're going to get much more fascistic about this. And this is why Zionism is central to their existence.
We're seeing that rapidly, you know, it went from, you know, just kind of shaming people, cancel culture, to actual censorship, you know, with the disinformation, misinformation industry kind of cropping up during COVID, to now we've got entire social media platforms banned. And, you know, you've got these laws all over the world getting passed, demanding that the social media companies shut down or take off videos and whatnot. So how do you think, obviously the first step is always just waking people up, but what is the next step after that?
Well, Mel, you know, in 2020, about 500 million people know that I was the one who uncovered the fact that the government has a backdoor portal into Twitter, into my historic lawsuit. People can go to winbackfreedom.com and see that. So, and that infrastructure was put in place between Britain and the Atlantic Council and people at CISA, Harvard Belfer School in 2018. They literally created an infrastructure where they have hooks into every major social media company. So this is what took place. And that was made possible with the passage of a law called CISA, which was signed into law by Trump. And people should know this. It was unanimously supported by every major member, every House member, and every Senate, unanimous consent. So the First Amendment says that Congress shall pass no law which shall abridge the freedom of speech. That's what Congress did, and Trump signed it into law. So that's what happened. November 16, 2018, in my view, is when the First Amendment died. And that was brought to you by Donald Trump, who did Operation Warp Speed, and the MAGA Republicans were taken for a ride. It was quite extraordinary what took place, total fascism. And now where we're at is there's a much more deeper duplicity that's taking place. You have people like Tucker Carlson, Elon Musk, all these people are being promoted as though they're our saviors, when in fact, they are working for the swarm directly. Joe Rogan, Alex Jones, all these people. A neo-establishment is emerging because the elites know that people are getting smart and they're breaking away from the old media establishment. So it's like a metamorphosis. As one thing dies, you're creating another. And the only way out of this, Mel, in my view, is what my great-grandfather said, is education, 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 education. This is why I do videos nearly every day. This is why I did that swarm video. We have to explain to people without dumbing it down, because I have great faith in people, that we at Truth Freedom Health teach people this. You know, the same curricula I used to teach at MIT, we made it accessible to a plumber, hairdresser, electrician. They need to understand the system's dynamic. And we don't need everyone to get all of it, but if we get about 10,000 people, everyday working people, understand the depth, the theoretical framework of this, it's going to be over. And we've had a lot of success since 2020 to today. We were the first ones to hit Trump really hard from the right. We hit Kennedy hard, exposing all of his malfeasance. So the establishment now has created a bullpen of these not so obvious establishment people. I call them the NSOEs, Trump, Sanders, Booby Kennedy, Tulsi Gabbard, all who talk a big game, but they are literally watching this presentation right now. They are mimicking the words that we're saying because they know people are breaking from them. And they are literally having these people act like they're anti-establishment. And their entire job is to sucker people back into the establishment. And again, going back to the central thesis, not build the bottoms-up movement. They don't want to ever see that. So if we just get these basic, simple principles right, they do not want people organizing like we did in the 1800s, 1900s, bottoms up. They do not want us to talk about class. They want to keep it at race and Jews or Hindus or this or Muslims at that level. And they want us to think the change is going to come from some booby or some Trump, et cetera, because they want us to be on the plantation. Like Malcolm X said, they want us to be house slaves. They do not want us to get off the plantation and be field slaves. So if we understand these core principles, and enough of us get it, when you have a vibration of consciousness change, everything changes overnight. History has shown this. So that is where the real weapon is, to A, educate people on the system science. That's why I did that swarm video. That's why I encourage people to get educated or you will be enslaved. The elites know this science. George Soros is one of the theoreticians of reflexivity theory, which is in system science. They know it exactly what they're doing. Exactly what they're doing. And they're doing it deliberately. This is why the Zionists and the Nazis are uniting now as never before. Because they have to come together, because lots of people started figuring this stuff out in the last 6 months. And they have to bring people back into line. That's what's taking place right before our very eyes.
I think something that that I've just observed is the need for people, or I don't know if it's just a natural inclination, for them to gravitate towards these kind of these cult figures, right? And you see it all over the place. Even somebody not as prominent, but somebody like Tucker Carlson, and people gravitate towards them and they look to them for the answers for everything. And I think that that's just maybe a natural human
Yeah, people do gravitate to find their own leaders. But what's happened with the era of mass media and control of the media is they don't get given all the choices of real people. For example, you know, I was supposed to be on Tucker's show a couple of times, okay? But he exists. He is part of the CIA deep state. Suddenly he's talking about aliens and this and that, 9/11. But go look at his posts, his tweets. Not one statement about Zionism. So the issue that they're doing is telling truth is no longer interesting, because every idiot is telling the truth. The issue is, when did you tell the truth? When did you tell it? You're talking about 9/11, 20 years later. When did you tell the truth? And are you telling the truth simply to have an academic exercise to demobilize people and make them into learned helplessness? Or are you telling to mobilize them at the right time? If you look at 2020, I told the truth about the pandemic in March of 2020. We mobilized people to action. We organized the Fire Fauci campaign. We taught people how to take vitamin D3, quercetin. We saved hundreds of millions of people's lives. Booby Kennedy was promoting lockdowns. That's what he did. He promoted lockdowns, said it was part of enabling climate change. Trump, all these people, Joe Rogan was nowhere to be found. I didn't see any of these doctors there. They all kept their mouths shut. So they profited from their silence. And then 2 years later, they're saying, oh my God, this stuff causes myocarditis. You know, give me $20,000 for a book tour, whatever they're doing. So we have to get working people need to get much more critical of these people. We need to recognize, when did you tell the truth? When did you tell the truth? Because if you didn't tell the truth at the right time to the right people to mobilize them, you're part of the problem. In fact, you're part of a limited hangout, a CIA technique that was built to tell the truth much later, release it in dosages, titrate it to build credibility. And that's why Tucker Carlson exists. He's a complete scumbag. His father was part of the CIA. He's part of the deep state CIA. All these people are created. If you're getting major publicity, you're controlled. You don't get out there, particularly on this controlled medium, unless you're part of it, unless they want you for a reason to use you. Mel, I have a couple of minutes left, but we can do a follow-up. I mean, I enjoyed this. Yeah, is that all right with you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Definitely. I'm going to look into this, into your Bolshevism. I'm going to read this book. You said 10 days that shook the world.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that we have to understand the 1920s, 1900s, were an extraordinary time of political exchange. There were all sorts of discussions taking place, you know, by people all over the world. Indians were thinking about revolutionary change. That's why they brought in Gandhi to screw up the movement. He was parachuted in. But there was a revolutionary fervor in the late 1800s and the early 1900s, and a lot of it was centered in the United States. And the American bourgeois, the elites, needed to deliberately wipe that out of the memory of the American working people. So they had to create the Red Scare. And this was deliberate, absolutely done deliberately. And by the 1960s, 70s, 80s, all of academia was taken over to vilify the Russian Revolution. That's what they did because, I mean, in Russia, they hung the bankers, they killed the Tsar, working people took over. I don't think they want to see that occur, right? They didn't just go kill Muslims or kill Jews. They went and killed and attacked a particular strata of the class, which had subjugated them, brutalized them. So they do not want that ever occurring again, right? So this is why they have to distract us by race, religion, fundamentalism, Nazism, Zionism, Brahminism. And once we get that, forget even about weapons, forget even about violent change. Once we get that consciously, you know, there's going to be a massive change. And that's what our movement, Truth, Freedom, Health, is dedicated to. That's why I'm running for president. My run for president gives people a real opportunity to see what a real leader from among us looks like, right? We don't have plastic surgery. We're not on TRT therapy, right? We're not, you know, banging 20 women. We're not, you know, paying off prostitutes. Working people do not have the luxury of doing this. We have to live a decent, honest life. We may vary in our religions. We may vary in our color. We may vary in our race, but we actually work for a living. These people do not work. And this is a fundamental issue. They don't create any value. They move capital around all day. And once enough of us get this, we're going to look beyond, oh, what religion are you? What race are you? What nationality? We're going to look, oh, you work for a living. You have a family. You have to put food on the table. So do I. These people don't. Booby Kennedy was banging 28, 30 women, keeping diaries of them. Then his poor wife found out and hung herself. Is that what you consider one of us? I don't think so. He openly tells you personal integrity does not mean public integrity and personal integrity can be two different things. That means you can live duplicitous lives. So they are getting us used. And then they use the words of Christianity. They use the words of Islam. They use the words of Hinduism. They use it to use it. They have no interest in God. They have no connection with anything spiritual. It is all about materialism. It's all about maximizing power, profit, control. So that's what we need to get. And that's what this country was about. That's what these movements were about that women led. So they want to wipe that out of our memory. Anyway.
Yeah. I do think that people struggle, you know, normal people like us do struggle because we do apply these just, you know, what we believe to be universal values, that we would never do these things, so surely they wouldn't.
And exactly.
I think that it is hard for a lot of people to grasp.
Yep.
That these people are not like us. They simply are not rooted in the same values, morals, ethics, principles. None of it.
Yeah, no. That's a core, Mel. The hardworking people, it takes us a while to go through this journey to realize these people are evil. They do not share our same values. So we keep like an abuse victim, like, you know, a woman who keeps getting abused by an alcoholic husband. We keep giving them amends, right? Oh, well, yeah, he beat the shit out of me for the last week, but he did give me a rose. He gave me one rose today. Oh, he's so beautiful. Isn't this nice? Or he gave me chocolates yesterday. So they titrate this kind of nonsense, but we forget the big elephant in the room. They do not give a damn about us. They want to subjugate us. And that's where we're at. So if enough people get this, they'll realize this very unholy alliance that's occurring right now. And we should become aware of this, that the Zionists and Nazis are uniting as never before. So we don't unite. And that's what it's about. Mel, thank you very much. It was great speaking with you. Be well. Thank you. Yeah. All right, everyone. That was my discussion with Mel, a wonderful woman, mother in North Carolina. I hope this is valuable. I want to play for you guys a video which will hopefully compel you to get involved in the movement for Truth, Freedom, Health. Go to Truth, Freedom, Health. Become a warrior scholar, because you have to understand at a fundamental level, the elites have no interest in you getting educated to understand this dynamics of how they manipulate us. So please listen to this and get involved, get involved, get involved.
We have allowed our country to be taken over from within, and the end goal is you will have a homogenized world where we will become slaves, because there is a condition among the elites that really thinks they're better than you, deep down inside them, that you don't deserve the freedoms you have. They don't. This reality is what people need to wake up to, and we need to all unite, working people. There's only one movement that can do that, and that is the movement that we started creating here in Massachusetts, the Movement for Truth, Freedom, and Health. Look, I've been a student of politics since I was a four-year-old kid, studying revolutionary movements, left wing, right wing. There's a physics, there's a nuclear science to destroying the establishment. To build a bridge, you need to understand Newton's equation. You need to understand the laws of gravity. You need to understand Poisson's ratio. There is a way to build a revolution. And that's why I put this together. My goal is to train a army of truth, freedom, and health leaders. We don't need followers like social media. We need leaders, but they need training, because the educational system does not teach them history, nothing. So in 3 hours, that's what I've started doing. That's the solution. Wow. We got to train people first with understanding what a system is, the dynamics of all systems that affect nature. The second is understanding the interconnection between truth, freedom, and health. Freedom is the ability to move freely, communicate freely, talk freely. Without freedom, you cannot convert ideas, hypothesis into truth, which is science. And without freedom, you can't really get to truth. And without truth, you make up fake problems and fake solutions, which means you destroy our health. And without health, which is the infrastructure of us and our body, you can't fight for freedom. Truth, freedom, health. Third concept is it has to be bottoms up. Working people, people who work uniting. And what the right wing has done is whenever you say working people unite, that must be communist. Meanwhile, they've let the Democrats run unions, which suppress workers, completely corrupt. But when you look at the arc of American history, it's been when working people came up. We need to go local. Every solution I'm coming up with is a part of this movement. We're giving the science, which is the truth, and then we tell people what they can do on the ground. Like with election fraud, you don't need to wait for some lawyer. Our goal is to train people to go local, to go local, to go local, fight locally. Forget lawyers, forget politicians, forget celebrities. You've got to learn politics, and there is a science to it. They lock us down, we should be ready to shut them down. And the fourth part of this principle is the not so obvious establishment. So when you look at a system, there's always something that disturbs you from getting to your goal. Well, the biggest disturbance is the not so obvious establishment, which are those people who claim they're for you on the left and the right. The Al Sharptons who tell black people I'm for you. The Tucker Carlsons. Do you think any true anti-establishment person will ever be on Fox or CNN? I don't think so. They both mislead working people back into the establishment. Without this solid understanding of political physics and theory, you're screwed. You're going to follow on the left wing, Bernie Sanders. Oh, he said something. Or Robert Kennedy. Scumbags. or you're going to follow some right-wing talk show host. They're not going to lead us to liberation. It's us. We're building a bottoms-up movement, and that political physics, it's a nuclear science of change. Bottoms up. We have to organize to understand that there is people who talk a good game, and then look at what they actually do, left and right. I'm sorry, Sean Hannity may say some good things, but I don't see the urgency in his voice to get something done, and it can only come when you weaponize yourself with the right knowledge. You need to be able to identify a rat. You know, Christ didn't go after the Romans, right? It was the Pharisees and the Sadducees who screwed him up. His own, quote unquote, people. And that's where we're at. So these four concepts I've built into a curriculum where people can go to truthfreedomhelp.com, and it's an educational program. We need to train people in political theory. You need to have physics, and I've created that curriculum. People need to get educated. We need to get educated fast. And within a half an hour, I can teach people 2 years of MIT control systems. I teach people those concepts. Then I apply it. Anyone can understand it. And then you say, oh, I got to build a bottoms-up movement. They have to get politically astute, and then they have to go locally and act, not sit there on social media. They have to act locally, defy locally, do civil obedience locally, but with knowledge on how to build a movement. Now, the Senate campaign's expanded to the Movement for Truth, Freedom, and Health, and they can find it on truthfreedomhelp.com, so people can sign in, they can get access to a bunch of videos. If they want to take a course and become a Truth, Freedom, Health leader, I offer a full scholarship there, but we want people to make a commitment that they'll study, that they'll get certified, that they'll go do activities on the ground. So go to truthfreedomhelp.com.
All right, everyone. I hope that was valuable. Be well, be the light. Recognize that we have to build a bottoms-up movement, and there's no way around it. I want everyone to go to Shiva for President, get one of these bumper stickers, come to our open house, volunteer, volunteer, volunteer. We must get on the ballot. Our movement is here. You have no excuse but to get off your ass. That's what you need to do. So
we need to build a bottoms-up movement. Go to shivaforpresident.com and volunteer.